In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet, following the truth wherever it leads, exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites, revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality, coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
And welcome to another episode of Strange Planet. How far has MKUltra gone? It certainly didn't end with the destruction of records and the Church Committee of 1975. Serial generations of survivors are still being accessed and exploited. And my guest tonight, Ron Allen, is one of them. He's the author of 21st Century MKUltra Slave, a Vintage Transhumanism Tale, and it's edited by Ilana Freeland, who has been on the program with us a number of times. And Ilana, perhaps best known for her work on geoengineering, her geoengineering trilogy, including Chemtrails, HARP, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth, Under an Ionized Sky, From Chemtrails to Space Fence Lockdown, and Geoengineered Transhumanism, How the Environment Has Been Weaponized by Chemicals, Electromagnetism, and Nanotechnology for Synthetic Biology. Ron Allen, welcome, and Ilana Freeland, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Ron, let me begin with you. When did you decide, and how did you decide, that you were going to come forward and tell this harrowing tale of being an MKUltra slave?
Right. Well, it's like being backed into a corner. You know, at some point, you have to do something. Otherwise, you know, you're there defenseless. And so in 2001, I left the United States and I went down to Latin America, and I lived there for 13 and a half years, and things started getting intense with a few different things that we'll be talking about. But I came back after 13 years, and the technology here in the United States had moved things up for me as far as being a targeted individual as well as the MK Ultra. And I had to do something. And I was able to tell other people about what I was going through to see if anybody else was going through it. I had to dig deep and find out what it was exactly that I was going through. And in the course of all of that, I ended up making a video that the videographer I met, Delana, through him. And then she and I started on my book. I had been writing, taking notes quite a bit until that point. So that was, the video was 5 years ago, and her and I started in earnest about 2 years ago.
You're a lifelong victim of MKUltra. Oh, yeah. And when you went down to Central America, did that give you any respite from this torture or?
Not really.
Is that why you went down? You were hoping that maybe you could escape?
Okay, well, I pretty much had my fill of, it was just beginning when I was working in a high-tech job. And that's when I really started to detect that there was somebody external to me controlling me through technology. And it was slight, but it was happening and with no uncertainty. And at the same time, there was the election with George W. Bush and Al Gore. And at the time, I saw that there was really a problem with the voting system in the United States that most people didn't really catch on to. I thought it was rather obvious myself, but it concerned me. And between that and the electronic stopping of my heart, I bounced. I left, I packed up, I sold and moved down to Costa Rica, well, down to Mexico and then Costa Rica.
Ilana, most of my listeners will be familiar with MKUltra and Project Bluebird and Artichoke and Monarch and so forth, but there may be some not deeply or overly familiar with MKUltra. Can you just kind of give us a brief summation of what MKUltra is all about?
Yes, it started as an official program under the CIA in 1953. A lot had already been going on regarding mind control. Mind control was not initiated by MKUltra, but it was turned into a technology, and it had machines attached to it. It had drugs. Certain drugs would do certain very exact things, and then there was the torture, which they called pain induction, in order to force the personality out of the body and be able to program it separately from what the person felt that they who they were. So it was really with Operation Paperclip when we brought the Nazis in from even before the war was ended. I mean, people don't know this, but Wernher von Braun, who was the head of our rocket program, was actually an SS officer and extraordinary mind. He was brought in 1937. So they brought over their records from what they'd done in the concentration camps to various victims, not just Jews, but Gypsies and Germans and everybody who was captured and inferior. Be through the Dulles brothers, that would be Alan Dulles, who was the very first director of the CIA, the very new CIA in 1947, and his brother, who was Secretary of State, John Foster Dulles. Through these two men, they were able to scrub the records of all these card-carrying SS Nazi types and ensconce them in our military bases, the best labs in the country, hospitals, mental hospitals, universities. I mean, you name it. We gave them carte blanche. We scrubbed their records. And they brought MKUltra. And they also brought a lot of their technology into what we now call directed energy weapons.
And what's interesting about your case, Ron, is as an MKUltra victim, is you're a man, obviously. Many of us are familiar with people like Kathy O'Brien and, you know, female victims of MKUltra. Alisa E. is also mentioned in the book. I think she writes the foreword in the book and talks about her harrowing case. Maybe, Elena, you can explain why this is significant that we have a man coming forward as a victim of MKUltra as opposed to a woman.
Well, I've always wondered why there were so many female victims coming forward, but no men really. I knew that men were programmed, obviously, as assassins, as were the women, but they were also programmed for many other things, and I just couldn't, never been able to figure that out. So when Ron came my way, even though I'm busy with other projects, I really felt compelled to help him get his story out because he's a male. And in reading his manuscript that he sent me, I was able to see how different his programming was. It was as if he was vaguer on the details of how it had been done to him over the years. Whereas, as you know, with the women's accounts, they have a whole narrative that they come up with. But the women are usually programmed for what I call relational things, sex. They're very charming. They're very verbal. There's many, many differences. Whereas the men seem to me, I've only met a few who I really know are MKUltras, so a few males, and they're all programmed as what I call functionaries. It's all about, like in Billy Hayes. Billy Hayes is known as the Harp Man, and I worked with Billy for 2 or 3 years in writing about geoengineering, because Billy had been an MKUltra survivor since he was a little boy. His father was CIA, and so he ended up being programmed at the Dozier Boys School, which is known for horrific things having happened there, much torture. But very rarely will you come across anything that says that the CIA was programming boys there. And he would be taken out of class in elementary school, and he would be programmed. He would be tortured first, drugged probably, and then they would inculcate this knowledge into him about electromagnetics, about the secret space program, about all the things that were top secret, because of course, makes sense, doesn't it? They don't want these kids to talk. And so it's all sort of just stuffed in there. And then they pull it out as the child grows up, and then they send him to a high school, and it's the same thing at Niceville High School in Niceville, Florida. He's pulled out of class over and over again and programmed after being tortured and drugged. So that was MKUltra for males, who then, because they don't really know much more than the function for which they were programmed, they don't have the relational, emotional kind of thing that the women are able to retrieve from their memories. They know from A to Z their particular technology that they were programmed in. They can pull it up just like that, just like they're reading from an encyclopedia. It was unbelievable to me what Billy would come up with. So in Ron's case, turns out, bingo, he also was involved with some of the big players in technology, like Lockheed Martin. I mean, he didn't know what had gone on there, in my opinion, but I could see that they had put him there just as they used to use other of these defense corporations that Eisenhower warned us about too late. They would use these places for programming the males. It's just that In Ron's case, he didn't really remember much. And Billy was under duress because he could not talk about any of that, though he and I would have this little secret language that we had now and then in order to say something to each other electronically, because we never met in the flesh. We were always on the computer together. So that's the extent of my understanding of male programming, other than that book, Camellio, whose author escapes me right now, David Uyet or something. He also is talking about a guy who I am sure was programmed.
So Ron, and again, just for the listeners, this idea of inflicting all of this trauma, either with torture or drugs, to fracture the psyche, basically, and induce something called a dissociative disorder. So you can compartmentalize the mind, and people can put certain information in certain parts of compartments in your mind, and you may have no waking memory of what's going on, and so forth. So we had that kind of the early stages with the mass trauma and torture and drugs and so forth. How did it work with you? I mean, what were you subjected to at an early age? Was it physical trauma? Was it drugs? Was it high tech?
So initially, the hospital that I was born at in Pennsylvania, the Project Bluebird was there in 1950 or 51. And I was born there in 53. They separated me from my mother at birth. She didn't even see me. And my first 10 days were spent in the hands of the hospital. And through both vivid memory dreams and regression therapy, some of those memories have returned during my first 10 days there at the hospital. And one aspect was the electro shock. They threw a regression therapy. I saw myself laying on a metal gurney or a metal, some kind of counter. And I was shivering. They're laying, I felt that shiver. And then it occurred to me that it was pulse. It wasn't from being cold. And I realized that was what was happening. I was being electrocuted. And I have seen somewhere on the internet, I saw a video of a baby in MKUltra being electroshocked. And it was that. And I've been looking for that video and I haven't been able to find it, but that's how it started.
All right, we're going to take a quick time out and come back, discuss Ron Allen's harrowing ordeal, lifelong ordeal as a 21st century MK Ultra slave. Back with more of our conversation right after these.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Every Town Podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio, a 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again, and Elizabeth Schoaf from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. And we give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. Cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists. So go check out the Every Town Podcast, because every town, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market. You know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
The truth goes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. Third, it is accepted as self-evident. You're listening to Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
21st century MK Ultra slave, a vintage transhuman tale. Ron Allen, an MK Ultra survivor. Alana Freeland, also with us. She's written the editor's note, and we were talking about inducing convulsions. For what purpose? What were they trying to do? Was this induce some kind of telepathic abilities, or why were they doing this to a small baby?
Right. When I was 2 months old, my mother told me that when I was 2 months old, I drowned. I fell into a swimming pool, and I was pulled out by, it was on the Navy base, I was pulled out by a sailor and resuscitated. That's a little bit vague in my mind, but I believe her. I take her for her word that I went through that trauma. And that is rather consistent with what people have experienced in their super soldier programs. There's a lot of them have said that they were drowned at one point, went through that. And these are, you know, whether it's fracturing the mind so that they can set up, you know, different personalities, or something a little more devious. In my case, I ended up, as is noted in the book, having the snake within me. And it either happened during my birth or at 5 years old. There was another incident at the Navy infirmary. And during the electronic convulsion, that's, you know, a lot of what they're doing when they do that is not only splitting the fragmenting the personality, but they're also covering up for something that they did so that you will not remember. And through my memory dreams, I have remembered some of what took place at that time.
Alana, talk to me about these control mechanisms now that they're, you mentioned, you know, drowning. It seems to me that people that have a near-death experience often come away with some sort of a psychic ability. Is there a connection there? Is that what they were trying to induce?
Well, in Ron's case, I would have to say that that is very possible, because I think that producing psychic effects in him has been one of the objectives to whatever has been done to him over many all these years, beginning at birth. But of course, you know, they have to begin at birth. It has to, because you've got to get those reflexes in there. You've got to get that whole, thinking of drowning. And that, Ron's right. There are many victims who talk about being drowned, not just the super soldiers, but many others. Elisa E. remembers being underwater and breathing water. And a few years ago, I sent her an article I had found from a scientific journal wherein they talk about exactly that technology. So, I think with Ron, they were always interested. And you may remember this, Richard, it's called Operation Often. That was one of the 149 sub-projects under MKUltra. And Operation Often is all about psychic ability, taking you to the very point of death because they want to get a picture of what lies beyond death. They want to see, do you go off planet? Do you, are you met by beings? What kind of memories will you have? So they concentrated a lot of the trauma to get you very close to death in order to see if anything remained of whatever experience you had when you almost died, or maybe you did die and they brought you back.
What's coming next is, maybe difficult for people to comprehend or to even believe, but I want to get into the idea of whoever these people are responsible for this, basically hijacking your soul body or your astral body while you sleep, while you're in REM, and transporting your astral body to some deep underground military base, perhaps, to what's called a cloning center. Ron, can you walk me through what that's all about?
Well, it happens in sleep. There's another author who we found by the name of Donald Marshall. And Donald speaks of cloning. His book is basically about cloning. And his take is that what he calls REM cloning. And I've associated that with astral projection. But it happens, I believe we're talking about the same thing. It happens at that point in sleep during REM. And before this started, it's been 10 years, or my dreams would just be normal dreams. I would dream about the day that I had, or somebody that, I was interacting with, or whatever. And I wouldn't remember very many of them, and I didn't have very many of them. Starting around 10 years ago, they started being a lot more vivid in detail, as well as, remembering faces, remembering situations and locations, occurrences. And when I go into REM, I used to call it astral scraping, because that's taken away from me. I am removed and taken into a synthetic dream, somebody else's concoction. And this aspect of the clone appears to be people that are created from the subject, being me in this case, and when I fall asleep, they take my consciousness. It gets as the astral is leaving during REM, they capture it and they put it into this clone, and then these escapades start, and there has been assassinations, there's been sex parties, and several different avenues for that.
It's being performed by, it's your consciousness that's been transported to this clone. Elaine, is it Dr. Peter Beattie that talked about the ability now to fully clone a human in 9 months, and they start by electronically stimulating just a couple of human cells? And
that's exactly it. And that's what Donald Marshall also says, is that all you need, he says, amazingly, is two cells from the host body. And then you electromagnetically are going to treat that, not even for, I don't know, how many months did you say? I think he said, Donald Marshall says 2 months is all it takes. And you get the person to, this is not a baby clone where you're cloning from the beginning and that person now is going to grow up. No, this is a specific programming, cloning, which happens with the way you are right then. So they're making multiple clones at multiple ages. And the one doing the sexual escapades, as Ron called it, that one that is probably going through torture as well, and who knows what the mind is boggled by these elites and others, technocrats who run these cloning places where anything goes. It's the clone that's undergoing these these strange shows. But the thing I wanted to bring up, and I'm not sure Ron will, is the thing that really got me is there are people who belong to clubs where they get schedules of where Ron's camper is going to be that night. And all these people show up in their RVs and their SUVs with big screen TVs, and they're somehow paying probably a pretty hefty dime in order to get in on this virtual show, this virtual sex show that then proceeds. But I mean, this is like, wow, this is like an American industry. I mean, that's what really got me when I first read the manuscript.
So, Ron, these subscribers are watching the exploits of your clone. They've hijacked your astral body during REM, transported it to this clone. This clone is participating in all of these exploits, and what, they're subscribing on the dark web and watching all this just for their own personal gratification?
Yeah, basically. it's pretty well organized. You know, there has to be the alphabet agencies involved. But there's private investigators, there's citizen informants, and the alphabet agencies involved.
I mean, and that this is just one aspect of it, right? Because the sort of the exploitation, or for personal entertainment and so forth. The other aspect is there's a function, like a functionality, if they'll send you to Lockheed Martin to work, or in the case of Billy Hayes, they'll send him to work on the harp installation, or in the case of some women are used perhaps in a honey trap operation to blackmail politicians, right, and so forth. We're going to take another quick time out and get back with our guests, Ron Allen, 21st Century MK Ultra Slave, Editor's Note by Alana Freeland. We'll be right back.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Lincoln County 911. There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I'm a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, Just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily, wherever you cast your pod.
It's time to redefine reality. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
Elena, do we know where these cloning centers are?
Well, do you remember, did Donald say where they were? It seemed like he said one was like in the Midwest or something. I remember something about that, Midwest United States. Do you remember that?
Yeah, there was something up in Canada. I'm not sure what province it was, but in his book, he got rather specific about one place or a major place. But there's others in Hollywood, I believe he was talking about.
Yeah, and here's the cover, just so people could see. This is Donald Marshall's book. Very, very valuable. Just a short, and he did the best he could. He had been a victim since he was a little boy at these cloning centers, and still is, as far as I know. But the cloning centers, it makes sense to me that they would be in dumps. But it also makes sense to me that, like I was listening to someone talking about the Getty Museum, you know, where all the highbrows go to see art, and that there would be, you know, a great cocktail party down under it. And Donald describes that these cloning centers are where many acts are perpetrated on clones, but also there's more extensive lab type of places in the cloning centers. So it has to be someplace big. What, Ron?
I'll be right back.
Okay. Yeah, it has to be somewhat big because of the lab element. They're actually building the clones right there. So my picture of it, and I see about 15 or 20 cloning centers around the big, huge United States, and maybe it's similar in Canada.
What is the purpose of these clones? If they can control the mind of an individual, why do they need to go to the trouble of creating a clone? Why can't they just take Ron wherever he is and do with him?
I have a theory, which is that, you know, instead of the old drugs, hypnosis, and pain induction, that's the original system, that now they're moving to something even more kinky, that you've got genetics involved now. And Ron has dreams in which, you know, he'll see all these people just sitting sort of like rag dolls, just completely inert. And then now and then one will awaken. I mean, very much like X-Files or like, you know, the Star Wars movies or something. It's very, very sci-fi, very kinky. And I think that if there's a business, and you know how America is, I don't know how it is in Canada, but here they make a business out of everything, make a money maker out of everything, profit, 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 money, 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 capitalism. So you know, maybe that is why they've gone this route as well, simply as it's unique. And how many clones now, I'll ask you something that may make you squirm a bit. How many clones are on the TV channels now? How many clones are these so-called leaders that we're all listening to lie to us over and over and over? Are they just doubles? Are they just guys in with those fantastic new masks that the so-called president here wears? I don't know. But if you had a clone, I don't know if you'd know the difference. I don't know if I've even met clones. Maybe I have.
Ron, when did you start to piece this together? You mentioned at a certain point you were able to determine that there was sort of this external control happening to you. I remember reading in the book where you would close your eyes and you would see like little like LED lights or something going off when your eyes were closed. When did you start to piece it together and how?
Well, like I say, 10 years ago is when it started, and I was in Latin America. But that was not technologically, although they did use, they had that going on. They were also the third eye. I would actually see somebody's eyeball when I closed my eyes. And then when I moved back to the United States, the eyeball was gone and it became a digital, you know, light, or now it's either a little light or it's a dark spot. And they'll, when I close my eyes, then it's a trigger to them that, I'm about to go to sleep, and I don't know when REM starts or when their job starts, but it's keyed to when, you know, I lay down. They've got an electronic or a frequency that's going off that puts me into a quick sleep. I'm not on my pillow very long before I fall asleep, and it even hits me before I get ready for bed. But as soon as that starts, I fall asleep, and then, you know, the dreams start. And after each dream cycle, I wake up and I have a little bit of a memory of what transpired or where I was or what I was doing. And at that point, then I know that, you know, I'm being accessed, and because these aren't my dreams. They're synthetic. Somebody else is making them.
Are they being engineered in order to cover for what's actually happening when you're being transported to that clone body?
Yeah. There's a movie out with that's called Inception. And in that movie, what they do is they put somebody to sleep, and then they give him dreams, and they have an architect that sets up the buildings, the landscape, and what they're trying to accomplish is that they want to get into his safe. They want to see what he has in his safe. So they provide all these mechanisms for him to buy into it, the dreamscape and so on. And it's his subconscious, so he doesn't have access. He doesn't have control over what he's doing. But they'll get him to get into a safe. And all they have to do is create a safe in that dreamscape, and he'll tell them what he puts in that safe. And this is how, what they're doing. They're making their millions by creating that sort of thing. So this is, that is indeed what part of what's going on.
Elena, do you have any idea as to the mechanics behind hijacking one's astral body or their soul or whatever you want to call it during REM and transporting it to, if in fact, if we can use that terminology, transporting it? I mean, as you point out in the book, we're living in this holographic universe. Is there really such a thing as location? How is it done?
Well, that's it. It's a frequency world now. I mean, it always has been. Frequency is hugely important. We use words like vibration. We use now the word pulsing because most of this electromagnetic technology that we're now completely buried in, the power of it is the pulsing, because human beings are resonant beings. That's one of our beauties, one of our strengths, is this whole blood, bone, brain system resonates with the world, resonates with a crush we have on someone in third grade, resonates if we see a beautiful horse running. And so if they can control the resonance factor of what we're experiencing, see where I'm going with this, then they will control us. That's the beauty and the danger of being a resonant being. I mean, as the Chinese say, the bigger the front, the bigger the back. We have this great ability to resonate with the arts, with fantastic music by Chopin. We can do this, but on the other hand, they can too. They can too. And so I believe this is all about transhumanism. And Ron and I are pretty much on the same page with this, is that there, all this MK Ultra, the extent from 1953 to right now, where they're moving to the transhuman model, to the cyborg model, and they can do it through the brain. When they say that we will all be living on the internet as a singularity event, are they talking about physically we're going to live on the internet, or mentally, spiritually? I mean, you can't say the word mentally without thinking spiritual, but Americans do it all the time. So they're taking us through frequency and pulsing, and they're moving us into the internet, where they will then manipulate us. And Ron, I believe that most MKUltra survivors that have made it this far, I mean, it's very rare that they're still accessing and using someone of Ron's age. At least that's what I've thought in the past, and maybe I'm completely wrong, but they are using these people as experiments in order to do all of us.
Well, and part of that is for the sentient world simulator.
That's right.
A Pentagon project, and it's going to end up being the brain that they download into people in 2030 is what they're talking, but the targeted individuals, MKUltra, what they're doing is they're taking data and plugging it in, and the sentient world simulator is a virtual planet with all the people on it, and all the people will have their avatars. There's games, video games that you can join in. You know, you might have a sword or a Elizabethan theme or something like that, but it's basically the same thing. They're creating these avatars using the information that they're getting from people, and it'll be exact. They're part of what they're doing in these dreams isn't just fantasy or sexualizing or whatever, but they're getting information from me. I'm seeing a lot of my past played out. And so they're going to feed the SWS with all that information. So I've, you know, at one point somebody said something about a river of information, because they've been doing it for so long for me, that they've pretty much got, you know, what they need, you know, but they keep pulling more. So
is there any escape?
Say it again.
Is there an escape for you? Is there a way to escape this?
All I can do at this point is try to alert others as to what I see going on, hearing other people talking about what I'm going through and making sure that the information is out there. I don't see a stop to what's going on. There hasn't been any. It's constant.
You're being accessed every night.
And during the day. You know, I can hear a change in tinnitus in the tone when, you know, I think something, because these thoughts that I have, you know, there's no privacy in here. The thoughts are being recorded as well, not just the dreams, but...
Any fear that by publishing this book and by speaking out, that you're going to exacerbate whatever.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it has. But that, for me, that's, that comes with the whole game. I have, you know, a lot of admiration for everybody that's being whistleblowers and trying to get to the bottom of this, because things are going real bad right now. And it's increasing at breakneck speed. And, you know, William Tompkins, who wrote a book on, you know, working with different of the defense industry and making ships and for going off planet. He told me, you know, you just have to get it out there. You really do. Because we're not going to be, nobody's going to be able to figure this out and get it, you know, have an opportunity to affect change unless everybody that is experiencing these different things gets the news out.
Elaine, are we any closer to figuring out who's responsible and how we stop him?
Well, I mean, I of course blame everything on the CIA, because the CIA is not at all what it presents itself as. And then you have the military, where there seem to be good military and bad military. But in Ron's case, where it's the Navy, a Navy father, that is across the board the way it usually is with MKUltra and many of the targeted individuals. So we know these are institutions. And, you know, when you have institutions running things, who are you going to hold responsible? How are you going to prove that? I mean, that's the problem. I mean, I can name a whole raft of organizations like Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, L3, you know, all the defense contractors, they're all involved in this. And they know that the top brass, not the working guy. How do you hold, I think that's one of the great themes of this era of ours, is how do you hold institutions responsible? I haven't seen any institutions made responsible. Have you? I haven't seen any.
Ron, final word from you. What do you say to people who say, this is just too fantastical, too horrible to believe?
Well, I have an open mind and try to get more of a base of information. There's a lot of things that are out there that are available. You know, we've told you about a couple here with the Donald Marshall and, you know, then looking into MKUltra and seeing the different programs that were sub-programs that were under there. And, you know, slowly but surely, people are starting to wake up, that are starting to come around. We've been led into the slaughterhouse, and now we've got to find our way out.
21st century MKUltra slave. Ron Allen and Elena Freeland, thank you so much, both of you.
Thanks, Richard, for inviting us.
Appreciate it.
A new Richard Serrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Subscribe at StrangePlanetPodcast.com.